federal law if they qualify.
Call this meeting of the Labor and Industry Committee to order. Today is Tuesday, January 17th, 2023. We have a quorum, and assistant will note the roll. We'll start with the minutes. Representative McDonald, did you get a chance to look at the minutes from our last meeting?
Mr. Chair, I did not because I was reading some information, but I will look at it right now, and I would have to unapologetically approve the minutes.
Motion's been made to approve the minutes from the meeting of January 12th. All those in favor of approving the minutes, say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? The ayes have it. First bill, or the only bill we have on our agenda today, is Representative Olson, House File 19. And members, just so you know, currently the Senate's taking the same bill up over there. So some of the testifiers are the same testifiers in both places. So we're going to do things a little differently today. We're going to take the amendments up. And as people come in that we know are going to testify, we may break, but hopefully by the time we get through the amendments, we'll have all the testifiers here, or the majority of them. So I will move House File 19 to be referred to the Judiciary, Finance, and Civil Law Committee. And Representative Olson, I see you have an amendment. Is your the A1 amendment?
Yes, Mr. Chair, the A1 is my amendment.
I will also move the A1 amendment, and if you want to just kind of describe what that does. And
Sure. Would you like to adopt the A or try to adopt the A1, and then I could explain it in the context
the
of the bill?
I'll move the A1 amendment to put the bill in the form that the author wants. Any quick questions? Seeing no hands popping up. All in favor of the A1 amendment to put the bill in the way the author wants, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? The ayes have it. The bill's in the form that you want. Representative Olson, if you want to describe your bill and explain what the A1 amendment does.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. And House File 19 has been around for a while, and probably many on this committee have heard this. But it's a great bill, and I'm excited to be here to present it today. So Minnesotans care for one another, and we want Minnesota to be a caring state where all our families can be healthy and safe. I'm bringing this bill up today because we all know that everyone gets sick. And the pandemic was another reminder that when people get sick, they should be able to stay home, not just for their own health or that of a loved one, but for the health of all of us. This bill would ensure Minnesota is a state where, regardless of the color of your skin, your income, or where you work, you can stay home to snuggle with a sick child, where you can go to the doctor before your illness goes from bad to worse, where you can take time to recover from an illness or seek support in the wake of a sexual assault without worrying about missing bills or losing your job. Unfortunately, for too many, especially those we've called essential during this pandemic, this isn't the Minnesota they experience. An estimated 36% of working people, that's about 932 Minnesotans, don't have any paid sick and safe time. This means that in a state with the second most Fortune 500 companies per capita, more than a third of working people in our state face a terrible choice between caring for themselves or loved ones in need and the loss of wages or even employment, because in many circumstances, it is still legal for workers to be fired for needing to take care of themselves or a loved one. This is a common sense proposal that has proven effective in numerous states and localities across the country. It also benefits employers through improved recruitment and retention, lower employer health care costs through better use of preventative care, and lower presenteeism, or coming to work sick, all of which means higher productivity, fewer workplace injuries, and a healthier Minnesota. Moreover, this bill would help businesses hit hardest by the COVID pandemic compete with big box stores who have reaped record profits since the pandemic began. This is also a public health issue, since many of the employees least likely to have paid sick time work in jobs such as food service, or choosing to come in and work on the same side of that sneeze guard as your food, all because they need that paycheck, can have real health implications for the general public. Ultimately, this bill is about becoming the kind of caring state that I think we all want Minnesota to be. As for the bill specifics, it tracks closely with those municipal sick and safe time ordinances that have already passed in four cities in Minnesota including my own and Representative Kozlowski's, our own hometown, and including states recently in Colorado and New Mexico and 15 other states. To make it easier to follow, I'm going to be explaining the amendment as amended into the bill. Article 1, Section 1 merely changes the statutory reference from the existing law governing sick and safe time to the statute proposed in this bill, ensuring that employees can return to their same position at the conclusion of their leave. And the new section added in the author's amendment adds this new statutory reference for sick time to DLI's educational worksite poster. Section 2 contains the definitions. Of note, all employees except independent contractors working at least 80 hours in Minnesota for a single employer would earn sick and safe time to care for themselves or loved ones in the circumstances detailed in Subdivision 1 of Section 4. Section 3 details the minimum standards for accrual of earned sick and safe time, which is 1 hour earned for every 30 hours worked, up to 48 per year, and up to 80 at any given time, which can be thought of as the bank of accrued unused sick and safe time. Employees begin earning sick and safe time at the start of employment and can use it as accrues, which for a full-time worker would be 1 day after working for 6 weeks. Section 4, Subdivision 1, details the allowed uses of earned sick and safe time, including care for self or loved one due to physical or mental health needs, domestic abuse, sexual assault or stalking, or school or business closure due to weather or public emergency, or the need to quarantine and inability to telework. Subdivisions 2 through 5 set other conditions, including notice requirements, documentation, prohibiting the need to find a replacement, and the increments of time that can be used. Section 4, Subdivision 6 prohibits retaliation against employees who request or use their earned sick and safe time, while Subdivision 7 and 8 protect the employee's position and benefits while using their earned sick and safe time. Subdivision 9 details employee notice of their rights to earn sick and safe time, and Subdivision 10 allows employees to access how much earned sick and safe time they have available. Subdivisions 11 and 12 focus on employer records and the confidentiality of those records, while allowing an employee to access their own records and prohibiting discrimination based on the information contained in those records. Section 5, Subdivision 1 makes clear these requirements are a floor and that other paid time off policies can meet these requirements, and that the construction industry employees can choose to meet these requirements by paying the prevailing wage, whether on a public or private project, since the statute detailing how the prevailing wage is calculated in the construction industry specifically includes paid time off for injury or illness, disability insurance, and vacation time. Subdivisions 2 and 3 deal with when an employee is transferred or terminated or the company changes hands and requires employees to be allowed to keep their earned sick and safe time unless the separation from employment is more than 180 days. Section 6 is the severability language. Section 7 repeals the existing statute governing sick and safe time. And Section 8 is the effective date, which is 180 days following enactment. Article 2 of this bill creates the enforcement mechanisms for DLI, and creates the enforcement mechanisms DLI will need to ensure that workers and employees are protected under this bill, which are very similar to the authority DLI already has to enforce other wage and hour violations, including increasing the maximum civil penalties for refusal to submit required records in Section 1, applying existing compliance order authority to sick and safe time in Section 2, and increasing the maximum penalties for repeated and willful violations in Section 3. Rulemaking authority, statute of limitations, allowance for outreach grants and annual report, and joint liability for those who hire subcontractors known to have violated sick and safe time laws in Section 4, and substituting this new statutory reference into an existing private right of action around sick time in Section 5. And finally, Article 3 contains the appropriations. And this tracks on the fiscal notes we've had for the past biennium. $1,367,000 in fiscal year 24, and $1 million in fiscal year 24, and $2,018,000 in fiscal year 25 for the Department of Labor and Industry, which would fund education and outreach efforts of staff in fiscal year 24 to develop trainings and materials to ensure that employers, employees, and HR companies are ready for the start of Earn Sick and Safe Time, investigators and administrative support staff, one-time rulemaking costs, and updates to the existing labor standards and case management system. The base for DLI going forward is $1,708,000, and $51,000 in fiscal year 24 for the enterprise costs across agencies, with the base for fiscal year 25 and beyond at $102,000. And next, based on the best practices learned from other states and localities, including Minneapolis, it would be $300,000 in each fiscal year appropriated for grants to community organizations to do education and outreach. And then there is a $3,000 cost appropriated to MMB in fiscal year 24 for printing costs to meet the notice and posting requirements for state employees. And I believe that concludes the appropriation section. And so with that, that is the bill described as amended with the A1 amendment. And to your, Mr. Chair, you had mentioned, I don't know, behind me we have testifiers yet. Looks like maybe one is filtering in, but if you want to do amendments first, or I defer to you, Chair.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I will go to the amendments. Because I see one or two people here, but I don't see, give them a chance to get over here. The first amendment I have is the A2 amendment. That's Representative McDonald. You want to explain your amendment and move it?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd like to request a roll call on this amendment.
Roll call has been requested.
And
Representative McDonald.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This particular amendment, I hope Representative Olson, who will consider taking this, this will certainly help a large percentage of businesses in the state of Minnesota. According to the Chamber of Commerce and many other organizations, over 80% of businesses in Minnesota are small businesses, and that's defined as 50 employees and less. So it's safe to say that many of them are small family businesses, and we believe that this particular legislation will be harmful to our small family businesses, our family businesses who are the economic engine of Minnesota, and you can ask anyone about that. You know that, Representative Olson. In your district, you have many family businesses. This particular amendment will strike the word one, so from one employee, and bring it up to 50 employee. What are we doing? Full time. Oh, yes, I'm sorry. That's another amendment.
The A2 amendment.
The same kind of sentiment that I spoke earlier about the small businesses will apply to this amendment as well. Full-time employees. So it strikes so the full-time employees and it brings it to half-time, part-time employees. Many of these companies and businesses and family businesses do have part-time employees, and we believe that to mimic the federal law, it would be best to have it part-time employees and not full-time employees. That certainly will help a number of employees and businesses in our state.
So, Representative McDonald, did you move your amendment?
I didn't move my amendment.
You move your amendment, okay. And you request
right, just full-time employees.
Representative Olson.
No, did I?
What is your pleasure with the amendment? And
so I would respectfully vote, ask members to vote no on the amendment. The goal of this bill is to cover as many workers as possible, and that means part-time, and we want our part-time workers to be covered because those typically are the people who most lack access to Earn Sick and Safe Time in our state currently. They tend to be women, people of color, primary caregivers, exactly who we want to make sure we touch with this legislation, so I'd ask for a no vote on the A2.
Discussion.
Mr. Chair. Oh, go ahead.
So I'm checking to make sure there's no Representative McDonald.
Yeah, I would just debate that, Representative Olson. There's no evidence at all to indicate that this affects the mainly women or minority people. I know in my district there's hundreds of thousands of part-time employees. Well, not hundreds of thousands, but thousands of part-time employees. So there's no evidence to sustain that. And furthermore, this will help many of the small family businesses in the state of Minnesota by going from striking the word part-time and only pertaining to full-time. So this bill, of course, is a broad sweep, And it's just this would certainly improve the bill, and I hope you reconsider to take it.
Any further discussion? If not, Representative McDonald moved the A2 amendment. Roll call has been requested. Roll call.
Chair Nelson?
No.
Nelson, nay. Vice Chair Berg?
No.
Berg, nay. Lead McDonald?
Yes.
McDonald, aye. Representative Daniels?
Aye.
Daniels, aye. Representative Greenman?
No.
Greenman, nay. Representative Hill?
Hill, no.
Hill, nay. Representative Hussein?
No.
Hussein, nay. Representative Jordan?
No.
Jordan, nay. Representative Kozlowski?
No.
Kozlowski, nay. Representative Meckland?
Aye.
Meckland, aye. Representative Myers?
Yay.
Myers, aye. Representative Schultz? Representative Wolgamott?
No.
Wolgamott, nay. With the conclusion of roll call, Mr. Chair, there are 4 ayes and 8 nays.
4 ayes, 8 nays. The motion did not prevail. I have the A3 amendment. Is that yours also, Representative McDonald?
It is, Mr. Chair.
And do you want to move your amendment?
I'd like to move my amendment, the A3 amendment.
And you want to explain your amendment?
I do. On page 2, line 15, delete the word 1 and insert 50 employees. And I'll explain it when you...
Oh, go ahead, Representative McDonald.
Okay. Similar to what I said earlier on the amendment in which I was on the wrong amendment, this would comply with the federal FLMA law and include 50 employees. Again, 80% of our businesses in Minnesota are small family businesses. This particular bill, Representative Wilson, is very costly to them, and that furthermore, as the cost to them will be the cost to consumers. I'm a businessman myself. This year I celebrate 35 years in Delano in my photography studio. I have 2 or 3 employees, I think, this year. And businesses will not just consume this extra cost. They will add it on to the product. With inflation and the cost of consumer goods going up, this will affect every consumer and every business. So the least we could do is protect the small businesses, which, again, are 80% of Minnesota's economic engine. So I hope, Representative Olson, that you will do what's best for job creators and family businesses and the small family business who work every day through sick and through sick times and health times, and consider taking the bill, the amendment, and adding it to 50 employees or more.
Chair Olson, what was your pleasure with the amendment?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative McDonald. So I would respectfully ask for a no vote on the A3. If you have your packets in front of you, 2 of the small businesses from Duluth that have less than 50 employees have a letter of support in the bill, talking about what a benefit this has been for small businesses in our community, especially those that weathered the pandemic well, were the ones that had this benefit. And so we want every worker in our state to be covered. So the same kind of piece of what I said to the A2 is our goal is to cover all workers, especially those that typically don't have it. And so I would ask for a no vote on the A3.
Any further discussion? Representative McDonald.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Olson, any businesses in our state have the opportunity at any time without a state law coming in and mandating things that are more expensive for the state of Minnesota, consumers and employees, can offer this to their employees. You don't need a state law to mandate this. And I'm surprised. I thought maybe it was a mistake, Representative Olson, that you didn't include the 50 employees or more, because that would that complies with the Federal Medical Leave Act and the First Coronavirus Response Act. So at least I thought maybe you'd want to comply with our federal laws and allow 50 employees or more and really save the small family businesses from this extra cost and burden, in addition to the consumer cost, because they will pass the cost on to the consumer. You think eggs are expensive now at $7. Pass this legislation and we'll see it even more.
Any further discussion? Representative Myers, yes, I'm sorry.
That's all right.
I have trouble with names and the new ones.
That's all right.
Yeah, Representative Myers.
Thank you, Chair Nelson.
Representative Olson, you know, for a lot of Minnesotans, entrepreneurship, starting, growing a business is, you know, a dream or a goal. And, you know, I see this as something that is going to impact that. And I'm just wondering, you know, do you see something in this bill that's going to promote entrepreneurship for these small business owners, you know, or these families that are looking about taking, you know, the step to start something new?
Representative Olson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative, for the question. Well, I do want to say the cost has come up, and according to the annual Bureau of Labor and Statistics survey of employers, that it's less than 1% of total labor costs for Earn Sick and Safe Time. So when we talk about cost, that's the actual cost, less than 1% of the total labor costs. And we actually want to level the playing field where Fortune 500 companies who, you know, are able to provide this benefit, you know, or don't provide this benefit to their employees, you know, we want to make sure everybody does. If you're a large company, that make sure that they're doing it so we can level the playing field so that you can, a small business has to, will be doing the same things that we're now requiring these large businesses to do. So, and it keeps employees safer and healthier. And again, we're hearing in Duluth from small businesses who are able to stay afloat and to take more risk because they have the employees showing up, they're staying healthy, they were able to keep their businesses open. So we've seen this as a positive for those small businesses.
Representative Myers.
Thank you, Chair Nelson. You know, from my perspective in my district, talking to small business owners, being a small business owner, you know, a lot of us have, you know, worked for larger companies, but, you know, we want to have the quality of life of starting a business. And I do see this as impacting those people that want to have the dream of working in a family business, starting a business for themselves, for their children down the road. And I believe this is going to have a negative impact on that. Thank you.
Representative Mecklen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Olson, I'm self-employed, and I currently, in my one company, I am the only employee, and now I would have to file all this paperwork and pay all this on myself? Would that be a correct assessment?
Representative Olson.
If you're a sole proprietor, no.
Representative Mecklen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm a corporation.
Representative Olson.
Representative Mecklen, I don't know deeply your situation and how many employees, but if you have, if it's beyond you and beyond a sole proprietor and you employ anybody else, you would be offering them this benefit.
Representative Mecklen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Representative Olson. I would like to ask for a roll call.
Roll call requested. Any other questions? Representative Daniels, I see you tentatively put your hand up.
It isn't really to this, but just a comment. I've been doing a little bit of research the last few years, and two things kind of play into this bill. Number one, there was an IR study from 2007 to 2014, and they did a study of people that made family households of $200,000 or more. And that study revealed that $1.7 billion of wealth left Minnesota. And I know a few of the people that left. They're just tired of the, you know, the taxes. Another one that we've been fourth in the country on is people leaving Minnesota for, you know, whatever reason. So combined of, and these people that made, you know, $200,000 or more were probably the ones able to start a small business and maybe start up, you know, hire one or two more employees and build their business. I started from Bemidji Rental with one employee, and by the time 9 years passed, there was like 35 employees in three locations and stuff. So I think this bill would really clamp off the entrepreneurship of starting a new business and growing that business. And I just caution the author to maybe at least look at some of these amendments that are hopefully there to protect a small business, and just keep that in mind.
Thank you, Representative McDonald. I didn't hear a real question there, but thank you. Any further questions? If not, Representative McDonald, you asked for a roll call, or Mecklen did. Representative Mecklen did, yes. Roll call has been asked for. Please take the roll.
Chair Nelson.
No.
Nelson, nay. Vice Chair Berg?
No.
Berg, nay. Representative, excuse me, Lead McDonald?
Yes.
McDonald, aye. Representative Daniels?
Aye.
Daniels, aye. Representative Greenman?
No.
Greenman, nay. Representative Hill?
No.
Hill, nay. Representative Hussein?
No.
Hussein, nay. Representative Jordan?
No.
Jordan, nay. Representative Kozlowski?
No.
Kozlowski, nay. Representative Meckland?
Aye.
Meckland, aye. Representative Myers?
Aye.
Myers, aye. Representative Wolgamott?
No.
Wolgamott, nay. Mr. Chair, at the conclusion of roll call, there are 4 ayes and 8 nays.
With 4 ayes and 8 nays, the motion did not prevail. Representative McDonald, you have the A7 also?
Yes, Representative Chair Nelson, I move the A7 amendment.
Representative McDonald moves the A7 amendment, and you want to explain what this amendment does?
Yes, well, so far I'm not very lucky. Luck of the Irish is not with me, but I got 2 left, so I have an opportunity. This particular amendment, in your bill, Representative Olson, it is very broad with family members. I suppose at one point it's very important, of course, that we the family members, your definitions are very very broad, but they're too broad. So this particular amendment will narrow down to family members, particularly on in the bill, on line page 3, line 6 and 3, 6 and 7. When it says any other individual related by blood or whose close association with the employee is the equivalent of a family relationship, and up to one individual annually designated by employee. I don't think we have troubles here on this side of the aisle with the part of individual related by blood or whose association of employee is equivalent of a family relationship, but to have it open so broad that you can at any time designate anyone to as an employee, designated by the employee, anyone that could take advantage of this and use this particular paid, the earn and save sick time. So it's too broad. If your goal is really to have the employee have the opportunity to help its family members, if they're not feeling well, their grandparents, their children, their stepchildren, stepparents, et cetera, excellent. That's very good, important. But to designate by someone else that's not even blood related or for no other reason is too broad, and I'm hoping that you'll accept this and just keep it in the family, as they say in as the saying goes.
Representative Olson.
So thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative McDonald. I would ask for a no vote on this. I think of when my family, when I was young, my sister and I, we lived in a very rural area, 8 hours away from my family when my parents were both pastors, and it was oftentimes the people in our congregation that would help our family out because we were so far away from anybody related to us by a lot of the definitions. So having a designee of someone who could pick me up from school and do some of that caregiving if needed, and that would be something we want. We all want someone who can care for us, and having those designees available for families like mine would have been really great and would have something like this. So I respectfully ask for a no vote.
Any further discussion? Representative Kozlowski.
Thank you, Chair and Testifier, Representative Olson. I just wanted to chime in and show my strong support for the expansive definition of family. I'll use myself in this example, coming from communities of culture where we define family very differently, aunties, cousins, but also because of the impacts of historical trauma, as we've talked about here, the inequities. In my own family, for example, I was raised by my grandmother, with many different people in the community. And I was also adopted, as many Ojibwe people are, by another family. And most recently, I was lucky, coming from Duluth, working in a place where we have earned sick and safe time and these leaves, for me to be able to participate in cultural practices, which funeral and grieving practice goes on for many days, and sometimes upwards over a week, depending on which cultural community you're from. And that isn't always covered or possible for people to grieve and to be with community and to be able to come back into the workplace as a full human being. We know that people don't come in parts. And because I had those benefits, I was able to attend my adoptive father's traditional funeral, which went on for many days and nights. So also for many LGBTQ families who are not currently able to, you know, go through the legal adoption process, for example, of children. So there are many, many equity issues, and I just want to say thank you. And I know that we'll hear more from testifiers who will probably illuminate those stories, but that is really, really important. And I just can't iterate enough that I am so proud to be representing Duluth, which has led and is oftentimes leading, but the zip code that you live in shouldn't be what is going to be able to give you even ground in the workplace and in our communities. And so everybody should have access to that, including our expansive families. So thank you.
Thank you, Representative Kozlowski. Any further questions or comments? Representative McDonald.
Mr. Chair, just to be clear, we're not opposed, and I'm not saying this with my amendment, that we're not including family members and even adopted parents or aunts and uncles. That's already in the bill. So you did your due diligence. The particular line that we had concern was is line 3.8, which says up to one individual annually designated by the employee. So anybody could be that person. That's why I had this amendment, just to narrow it down to include the family members, be it blood or not. They could be a great aunt, an adopted aunt, a great grandma, but designated by an employee at any time for any other reason just seems a little bit too stretching for your bill.
If not, I don't see anybody's hand jumping up.
Yeah.
Take the roll. The roll call has been requested.
Mr. Chair, no roll call request.
Okay. All in favor of the amendment, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
Aye.
No.
Motion did not prevail.
Division?
Yes. Thank you. If you need a division, I think you need to get a hearing aid or your ears checked.
What'd you say?
Exactly. Never mind. The last amendment I have here is the House or is the A8 amendment. Is that also yours, Representative McDonald?
That is correct, Mr. Chair.
You want to move your amendment?
Mr. Chair, I'd like to move the A8 amendment and request a roll call.
A roll call has been requested. You want to explain the amendment?
Yes, members, this is your last opportunity to support McDonald's amendment on this particular bill. And the amendment basically takes the $10,000 fine that for employers down to $1,000. This is going to be a very complex bill for Dolly to incorporate and very expensive if you read the fiscal note. Wait, do we have a fiscal note? We don't have a fiscal note. Maybe Dolly could come down at one point and
Representative McDonald, talk we have a preliminary fiscal note, but it's not completed with, but it's going to come back to us. We have the fiscal note from last year also. But temporary fiscal note or what, preliminary fiscal note, that's the word I'm looking for. Anyway, so this is going to other committees that have fiscal impact. So before it gets to Ways and Means, it'll have a completed fiscal note.
So, Mr. Chair, you want us to support this knowing it doesn't have a fiscal note?
It has the preliminary fiscal note, and it has the fiscal note from last year.
All right. Well, anyway, I'll get back to my amendment. So it does change the $10,000 fine down to $1,000. The $10,000 is very expensive, and it doesn't give any room for mistakes of an employer. Should this pass, and same with paid family sick leave, those two are very complex bills, and they often overlap. Some of the rules and regulations don't even match up. So if an employer makes one mistake, they are subject to a $10,000 fine per incident. It's very onerous, very expensive, and this my amendment, Representative Olson, is really would help the job creators, the many jobs creators, family businesses in your district and mine and all of the state of Minnesota, and really help if they make a mistake. We are only human. As a matter of fact, I would go out on a limb and say they're going to make a mistake. You think that if an employer, be it 50 employees or two employees makes a mistake, they should be entitled to a $10,000 fine for a clerical error? Now, we hope that Dolly would have some common sense and some respectability and not mandate that fine and perhaps not issue it, but this law allows them to fine a $10,000 to be if for an error. To err is human. They will make mistakes. So, Representative Olson, would you please consider lowering your $10,000 fine to $1,000 for a first-time incident? And if there's three or four, then obviously we know that employer probably is not being careful and should probably pay that fine. But for the first or second error, $10,000 is a lot of money. And to small family businesses like mine, $10,000, that's a lot of money. So you're nodding your head, Representative Olson, so I take it you agree with me. Would you please consider and speak in favor of my amendment and lowering it?
Cheryl.
Thank you, Chair Nelson and Representative McDonald. So I'm going to ask for a no vote on the A8, Representative McDonald. And here's why. Because I hear what you're saying, there room for error. Of course there's room for error. But if you notice before you amend line 13.26, right? If you read the line right before that, 13.25, it says any employer who's found by the commissioner to have repeatedly or willfully violated a section or sections identified. So we're not talking about a one-time accident. We're talking about repeated or willfully violating. So this isn't talking about a one-time oops. This is you are intentionally not following the law. And then secondly, that this is a up to penalty of $10,000. And a third, according to DLI, that less than 2% of investigations result in any administrative penalty, let alone the maximum. So for those reasons, I say a no vote on this amendment.
Any further discussion? If not, Representative McDonald.
Thank you. Thank you, Representative Olson. Well, not to thank you because you didn't take my amendment, but thank you for your explanation. You are correct, but it also says the commissioner may fine the employer up to $10,000 for each failure to submit or deliver records as required by this section. So, you know, we got some smart lawyers in this building, and probably businesses do, and Dolly. So even though it says they may fine, this gives them the opportunity to fine. So it is very vague. I hope that Dolly in the will consider honest error, but by this law, or this bill should become law, it doesn't give them that flexibility to do so. So with that, I request a roll call a second time and ask for your vote of yes. This will be a good one to vote yes on, my friends on the other side of the table.
A roll call being requested. Please take the roll.
Chair Nelson?
No.
Nelson, nay. Vice Chair Berg?
No.
Berg, nay. Lead McDonald?
Yes.
McDonald, aye. Representative Daniels?
Aye.
Daniels, aye. Representative Greenman?
No.
Greenman, nay. Representative Hill?
No.
Hill, nay. Representative Hussein?
No.
Hussein, nay. Representative Jordan?
No.
Jordan, nay. Representative Koslowski?
No.
Koslowski, nay. Representative Meckland?
Aye.
Meckland, aye. Representative Myers?
Aye.
Myers, aye. Representative Schultz?
Aye.
Schultz, aye. Representative Wolgamott?
No.
Wolgamott, nay. Mr. Chair, with the conclusion of roll call, there are 5 ayes and 8 nays.
With 5 ayes and 8 nays, the motion did not prevail. Now I think some of our testifiers have made it into the room, so I'm going to go down the list here. Is there an Eva Lopez? Come on down to the table. And I got a note here, she needs to be done by 2:30, so we'll let her go first.
We all have to be done by 2:30.
Yes. And just laughing up here because I should point out we all have to be done by 2:30, but. Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony. And it looks like you have an interpreter.
Yes. A small note. My name is Laura Carpenter. I will be reading the statement in English following the statement being read in Spanish. But instead of Eva Lopez, who is a member of Local 26 at SEIU, we have Carla Gomez, who is here, also a member of Local 26 of SEIU.
So Carla Gomez.
Yes.
So I have my records right here. Thank you. Proceed.
Buenas tardes. Mi nombre es Carla Gómez. Soy madre de tres hijos. Yo vengo... Soy madre de tres, perdón. Estoy un poquito nerviosa. Es primera vez que yo estoy acá. Soy miembro del CU26 y trabajo en el turno de la noche en una tienda de combustibles. Los habitantes de acá de Minnesota necesitamos un tiempo pagado por enfermedad y seguridad. Nadie debería de tener que elegir entre la salud y el sueldo. Los miembros de CU, del local 26, en su mayoría, son de color e inmigrantes. Y muchos de nuestros miembros se ven directamente afectados por la falta de tiempo ganado, por enfermedad y por seguridad. ¿Por qué se espera que acudamos? Incluso cuando nos sentimos bien o nos sentimos mal, tenemos que ir a trabajar. Creemos que es ahora el momento de asegurarnos de que cada trabajador en Minnesota haya pagado su tiempo para cuidar a nuestros hijos por las enfermedades, ya sea por una fiebre o por cualquier otra enfermedad. El tiempo ganado por enfermedad y seguridad ya pasó en cuatro ciudades: Duluth, Bloomington, St. Paul y Minneapolis. Esto significa que miles de trabajadores finalmente cuentan con estas políticas. Pero debido a que no trabajo en esas ciudades, no tengo tiempo que me paguen. Por eso yo les pido a ustedes que nos ayuden en esta ley. Porque puede mi miembro de mi familia o una mi hija puede estar enferma, o yo que soy madre de tres hijos, se me enferma uno, curo a uno, se me enferma el otro, curo a otro y se me enferma el otro. Tengo que decidir entre mi trabajo o cuidar a mis hijos. Muchos de nosotros tenemos que preguntarnos si tomamos el día libre o no. Este año somos 8,000 miembros de CU26 y 1,500 fueron afectados por el COVID. Y una de ellas fui yo. Y no fui a trabajar y no me lo pagaron. Por eso les pido, esta política que ha sido importante del COVID para nosotros nos ha destruido nuestros ingresos. Los trabajadores a que llamamos esenciales, durante el COVID estuvimos presentes, trabajando, sirviéndole a la comunidad, con la higiene, con la limpieza. Y no somos reconocidos en eso. Por eso les pido, en el nombre de todos los miembros de CU26, que por favor nos ayuden de pasar esa ley y tener nosotros el pago por enfermedad. Gracias.
Okay, I will now read Carla's statement in English. My name is Carla Gomez. I am a mother of three children. I am a janitor and member of Local 26, of SEIU Local 26. Minnesotans need earned sick and safe time. No one should have to choose between their health and their paycheck. SEIU Local 26 members are mostly people of color and immigrants, and many of our members are directly impacted by lack of earned sick and safe time because we are expected to come in even when we are not feeling well. We believe that now is the time to make sure that every worker in Minnesota has paid time to care. Earned sick and safe time has already passed in four cities, in Duluth, Bloomington, St. Paul, and Minneapolis. This has meant thousands of workers finally have this policy, but many workers outside of those cities do not have sick and safe time for themselves so they can't take paid time off if they get sick or if a family member is ill. And Carla had said, you know, that if you have three children, one child is gets sick, the other ones are going to get sick next, another one, you're going to end up, you know, multiple days with six children when you have more than one child in your family. So many have to wonder whether or not to take the day off if we aren't feeling well or if our child is running a fever. We have to go to work instead of taking care of themselves or instead of taking care of ourselves, all to make sure that our bills are paid. Looking back, this policy would have benefited and saved lives during the beginning of the pandemic. Our union of 8,000 members had over 1,500 people get COVID, and sadly, five have died of COVID. This policy has always been important, but COVID showed that it is even more important. All of us get sick. It isn't fair that some people can stay home from work when they're sick and others cannot. Workers we called essential during COVID, like janitors, often don't get paid sick time. Our jobs are so important that we had to keep working during a global pandemic. Yet if we get sick, we have to choose between our health and our paycheck that we need to survive because we don't have this benefit. This is wrong, and it's time for you to step in and fix it. Earned sick and safe time provides working people with the opportunity to live with dignity. It helps businesses make sure workers don't come in sick. It makes our state a more fair and just place to live. We've been fighting for this policy for years, and I'm excited for this push to finally make it a reality. It would mean so much to so many people. Please pass Earned Sick and Safe Time as soon as possible. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Ms. Gomez.
Thank you.
Ms. Carpenter, did you have separate testimony?
I do.
Okay. While you're up here, why don't you stay there and give your testimony, and then I'll go to the next person.
Okay. Thank you.
Please identify yourself for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Yep, my name is Laura Carpenter. My name is Laura, and I am a mother, a staff member of SEIU, and a former food service worker in Minneapolis Public Schools. I'm here today to speak about the critical importance of the safe time portion of earned sick and safe time. In 2018, I was working in Minneapolis and had earned sick and safe time available to me at work. When it was clear that I needed to access legal protection from my abuser, my community helped me find the Hennepin County Domestic Abuse Service Center. I was able to take the day off work and go downtown to the center where I was supported by an advocate that helped me navigate the complicated legal system. This resource was invaluable to my family. I was able to leave at the end of the day with an order for protection for myself and my children and some more hope for our future. Being able to utilize this essential resource and others like it made a world of difference for us, but I wouldn't have been able to access the daytime hours if I was worried about my job security or my income. Just like no Minnesotan should have to choose between their health and their paycheck, no Minnesotan should have to choose between their safety and their paycheck. It's past time for everyone in our state, no matter where we live, no matter what we do for work, how much money we have, or the color of our skin, to have protection so that we can all be safe and healthy. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Carpenter. The next person I have on the list is Rebecca Naker. I probably butchered that.
That's amazing, Mr. Chair. Nobody gets that right. Good afternoon, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Rebecca Naker. I'm a St. Paul City Council member representing Ward 2, which includes downtown, the West Side, West 7th, Summit Hill, and a little bit of Railroad Island. And I'm really grateful for the opportunity to come today to testify to you about House File 19, a bill that would expand earned sick and safe time statewide. One of the first moments I remember when I first took office as a city council member was at the very beginning of 2016, when I joined my colleagues in coming together and convening a task force to research an earned sick and safe time policy. The task force was led by our former St. Paul Area Chamber of Commerce president, and it was comprised of community members, union representatives, local business leaders, and workers. Ultimately, the commission unanimously recommended an ordinance that would ensure that all workers in the city of St. Paul can address their own health needs and the needs of their family members, promote the economic security and stability of workers and families, allow victims of domestic abuse and their family members to be protected, and protect the public health. We passed our Earned Sick and Safe Time ordinance in 2017 with overwhelming community support, and we have never looked back. And I think that's especially powerful here today, hearing some of the questions that are legitimate questions about how a policy would work. When something is hypothetical, it's easy to wonder how it will turn out. So I think it's very important to look to places where it's already in place to ask whether those concerns have come to fruition. And in St. Paul, they have not. Earned Sick and Safe Time gives our workers the capacity to put the health of their families first. And we found in our research on the effects of this policy that, as was mentioned earlier, it primarily benefits lower wage workers, those frontline workers that we've talked about so much during the pandemic, those who run our fast food restaurants, our grocery stores, our childcare centers, our personal care assistants, our nursing homes. These are the workers who often live paycheck to paycheck and who do not have this benefit without state or city intervention. Critics of Earned Sick and Safe Time policy often argue that the policy will force businesses to close or relocate because of the exorbitant costs. As was mentioned earlier, the costs are quite minimal, and we have not seen that happen in St. Paul, and I represent a part of the city that has a number of commercial corridors, Grand Avenue, Cesar Chavez, West 7th, and beyond. In fact, Earned Sick and Safe Time was a lifeline for workers and our economy in St. Paul as we navigated the challenges of the COVID-19 pandemic. People will stay home when they're sick if they can do that, but not if they're not paid to do that. And we needed people to stay home when they were sick during the pandemic. We continue to need them to stay home when they're sick, and that's what we're seeing happen in St. Paul. In fact, Earned Sick and Safe Time has been so successful in our city that tomorrow afternoon, my colleagues and I will be seated around a table much like this, and we will be voting to expand Earned Sick and Safe Time to more workers in St. Paul. Having this coverage for everyone in Minnesota is the right thing to do, and I'm very grateful for your time and attention and the opportunity to testify in support of House File 19. I want everyone in Minnesota, not just my constituents, to have the benefit of this policy. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Council Member. Any questions of the Council Member? Seeing none, thank you again for your testimony. Next person I have on my list is Kali Yama. Welcome again to the committee, and please state your name for the record and proceed.
Thank you. Hi, my name is Kali Jama. I'm one of the warehouse workers, and I'm here also supporting the safety to be able to get a sick time pay. Like, through my experience working in a warehouse, I've never experienced where I had to work with people who are literally vomiting sick, especially once we got off the COVID, the five couple months that Amazon took all masks off. Whoever wants it can wear. It's a lot of sick people. So for me, I had to fight them. For Amazon worker to get a sick pay or sick off, you have to go to the urgent care. A lot of people don't have medical when they start the job because they don't give you medical until the first 60 days to get approval medical. So for me, it's really important to pass this bill because a lot of people would appreciate, especially me. I'm a single mother of two children who both play sports, both in college. So when they come home and I'm sick, I can't spend time with my kids because I had to work literally night before that, before I came home to able to get better. I walked out of the job because I told them I was sick and I'm not going to go to urgent care. So they said for me to have my job back, I had to show or prove that I was sick. Them seeing me coughing, them seeing me not able to stand still didn't matter unless I brought a proof. So I don't see the necessity of someone going to emergency care if it's just the flu. A lot of people don't go in for that. Or you need some rest to stay home, especially with the long workloads that we do at Amazon. So for me, it's so important for the all the people that work there, the diverse people, the Somalians, the East African community, and also the Latinos community who do not speak English. I'm here to speak for them and for myself and through the experience. So I would really appreciate it if we get this bill passed because we do need safety, a sick pay time, especially if we work in 12-hour shift 5 days out of the week. And a person sick, and I don't feel comfortable working with someone who's sick because there is a chance of you getting sick also, especially not wearing masks. And I know people say COVID is over. As a nurse, I don't think it's over yet. It's still there. So sick pay will do benefit a lot of families, that especially family like me, a low-income family, who are single mom, been working two jobs all my life. So I need to stay healthy. So when I get sick, I want my company to understand me that I'm sick, that I can go home, not be afraid to lose my job or afraid to not have income for the next month. And that's all. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Appreciate for your testimony. Any questions? I don't see anybody's hand jumping up. Next person I have on my list is John Reynolds. And again, please identify yourself for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. My name is John Reynolds. I'm the Minnesota State Director for the National Federation of Independent Business. We represent 10,000 small businesses around the state, every corner, every industry. No Fortune 500 companies, no publicly traded companies. Our average member is 10 employees and $500,000 in annual revenue. As I'm sure you can see in your own communities, in your own districts, Main Street is still facing a lot of problems. According to NFIB data, our own members say that two-thirds of our own members say that their sales are still below pre-pandemic levels. Inflation, workforce shortages, supply disruptions, are still causing issues, causing lost sales, causing early closures, and wreaking havoc on small business bottom lines. Before jumping into some of our concerns with the bill, I just want to say, just like it's no fault of an employee who gets sick that they need to take time to get better, it's also no fault of a small business that this is going to increase workforce challenges or workplace management challenges and increase costs for them. This will increase costs. There's no pot of gold at these small businesses in the back room. There's not even a back room in a lot of cases. And a lot of them are stretched to the max after the last 3 years. Just to give an example of how this will increase costs for very small employers, according to using average hourly wage data for localities from the U.S. Bureau of Labor Statistics, a small business with four employees making the local average hourly wage in the Twin City suburbs, which is around $30 an hour, would face additional first-year costs of up to $5,800 and up to $9,600 per year in future years. I could give you other cities, but I won't bore you. I'll send you a letter or something. And just, you know, others have alluded to it, small businesses are different than big businesses, obviously. They work hard to take care of their employees, to take care of their communities, and when somebody is sick, they do the best they can to accommodate it and keep the paycheck of the employee whole to the extent that they can. And I would just lastly encourage the committee and the bill author to look at other states that have passed similar laws that have created special provisions for small businesses, whether it's New York or Oregon, who've required unpaid leave for businesses under a certain size. So thank you again for the opportunity to testify, and I'll be up there for any questions.
Thank you, Mr. Reynolds. I just want to say, are there any questions? Representative McDonald.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Reynolds, could you reiterate the numbers that you stated regarding the Twin Cities? I think it was $5,800 to $9,600 per employer. Sure. Is that correct? Based upon an employee that's making approximately $30 an hour, is that correct?
Mr. Chair, members, yes, that's correct. So 48 hours times $30 an hour per employee times four employees is $5,760. And then, of course, you can bank up to 80 hours per year, so that would be up to $9,600 in future years.
Lead McDonald.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Per employee?
No. Sorry. Those are the total costs for an employer with four employees.
Lead McDonald.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So employer with that that will incur the cost of $9,600 for a small business, makes a clerical error, then gets a $10,000. That's close to $20,000 for that employee or employer. in Minnesota, correct? Potentially.
Mr. Chair and Representative McDonald, that's correct. As Representative Olson noted, willful and repeat violations was what the $10,000 penalty would apply to, but a violation can certainly be repeated by accidental mistake. So it's a significant cost altogether.
Representative McDonald.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Mr. Reynolds. Being a business on Main Street, Minnesota, knowing what a $10,000 or $20,000 per year can do is detrimental. And I would presume, since I used to be a member of NFIB, and I suppose you'll probably come knocking on my studio door to become a member again, would you probably say that that is very costly to the employer, the job creators in America who are in Minnesota who are doing the labor that keeps this economic engine running?
Mr. McDonald,
wouldn't you agree?
Mr. Chair and Representative McDonald, I think even just taking it back to the $10,000 cost, when you're talking about adding $10,000 a year in labor costs or up to $10,000 a year in labor costs for whether it's, you know, a little cafe or coffee shop or hardware store, that's substantial. I mean, that is a substantial increase, particularly when that cost starts accruing maybe in the middle of your fiscal year, like this would. Well, depending on if and when this bill passed, right? It starts 6 months from passage. So it poses a number of financial challenges for very small employers.
Representative Mecklen.
Last question, Mr. Chairman. Then, Mr. Reynolds, wouldn't you agree that the cost of that per employer, those businesses and your expertise, will just pass it on to the consumer? And that is why in the city of St. Paul, I pay more for a cup of coffee or a hamburger or a cheeseburger or a piece of gum. We don't pay that kind of money in Wright County because we don't have paid family sick leave like St. Paul does or Minneapolis. That's why the cost of goods cost more. So I presume, rightly, with your expertise, that those businesses will increase the cost of their product and consumers will pay more in addition to 13% inflation that we're already paying.
Mr. Reynolds.
Mr. Chair and Representative McDonald, I've never had a fancy cup of coffee in your district, so I don't know what the price range is. I don't really drink fancy coffee. Well, just one comment on that, right? Yes, of course, additional labor costs get passed on to consumers. But, I mean, consider also that over the last 3 years, that's how small businesses have been keeping up. In our most recent, NFIB has done a COVID survey just to kind of gauge where small businesses are at throughout the pandemic. And in the most recent iteration, which came out in December of 2022, 70% of small businesses report raising prices, and at some point you're going to hit that upper limit. You know, there's only so much of a price increase that your customers can take before they stop buying your product, and I think that that's where a lot of small businesses are at after these last 3 years.
Representative Mecklen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. A couple of things here. So you established that roughly it's $2,400 per employee. You used the example of four employees, which put it at $9,600, correct?
Mr. Reynolds.
Mr. Chair and Representative Mecklen, yes, in the second and subsequent years when an employee could use up to 80 hours.
Representative Mecklen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Correct, but I believe you also stated in your testimony that your average member has 10 employees. Is that correct?
Mr. Reynolds.
Mr. Chair and Representative Mecklen, that is correct.
Representative Mecklen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So really, these small businesses that you represent, the average is about $24,000 per year in the second year and going into perpetuity.
Mr. Reynolds.
I can't explain to the committee, Mr. Chair, Representative Mecklen. I don't recall the reasoning why I picked four employees other than I think everyone would agree that's the definition of a very small employer, and I haven't done the math of what the cost would be for 10 employees, but yeah, your math sounds about right.
Representative Mecklen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, 24 times 10 is 2,400. So, $2,400 times 10 would be 24,000. Another thing I'm wondering if any of your members are asked about, or if there's any maybe where this came from. But why is there no grants for small employers? Have you got any information on that as to where this, why the unions and the community organizers are getting grants to help learn this, because this is a big thing, kind of like wage theft was. We heard a tremendous amount of just being compliant with these big packages that come in, regulatories that come at us. and we know there's going to be more this year. So do is there any kind of, I mean, programs that what these small businesses are being given, or is with your association? I mean, because obviously they've cut you out of the funding mechanism. Is there something that is being done for all these small employers to help learn all this?
Mr. Reynolds, I don't know if that's for you or if that would be for the author. Representative Olson.
Sure, Mr. Chair and members. I can answer a little bit about that question. So this is modeled after what we learned in the cities that passed it. So it's easy for DLI to reach out to employers. Like, there's a network, there's groups, there's places that can do education for people that have worked their entire lives, like some of the testifiers we saw here, who the outreach efforts, we want to make sure that they're reaching out. They're being heard from trusted community organizations to get out the word that they have access to this benefit too. So this is based on best practices we've seen in other places and states and within our own municipalities where this has happened. So that is why I just want to go back, as long as I have the microphone for 1 second, to the cost part that we talked about when talking about the Bureau of Labor and Statistics, less than 1% of costs. And I think what the testifier was sharing was the assumption that every worker get the full accrual rate and then uses it all. That is a max assumption, which isn't actually how it works. I think for probably most of us around the table and people we know, you're probably not accruing it and using it as quickly. You have a little bit of a bank, right, in case my kid gets sick or something. So that's assuming the most maximum every year every employee has accrued and used the full amount and been replaced in that time that they'd have to bring in other workers. So I just want to put a point on that versus the information we have from the Bureau of Labor and Bureau of Labor and Industry Statistic.
Representative Nicklin, I'm going to go. Mr. Reynolds isn't going anywhere. I got three more testifiers, so then we can get questions.
Pardon me? I'm sorry.
I said we're going to go to the next testifier, and then we'll come back with finish up our questions. Okay. We got three more testifiers.
That's fine.
Thank you, Mr. Reynolds. Don't go anywhere. The next person on my list is Joe Pickett. Welcome to the committee, Joe. A long time no see. Please identify yourself for the record and proceed.
Chair, members of the committee, my name is Joe Paquette. My wife and I are small business owners. We own two child care centers, one in Brooklyn Park, one in Maple Grove. We've been in this business for 15 years, and we employ 65 people, most full-time, but we do have some part-time members as well. So I've read House File 19, and as a small business owner, I just wanted to provide some feedback about this bill. First, fundamentally, I believe that in a free market economy, businesses should be deciding what benefits to offer their employees. I understand the state's desire to make sure workers in the state are treated fairly, and I respect that. But I do believe that employers know best what their employees want, because we talk to our employees. In a small business setting especially, we're very close to our employees. A few of the concerns that I have is the way the bill is written in some of the areas. Some of them were brought up in the amendments. But as a business owner who's responsible for making sure my business is successful, making sure that my employees have steady paychecks, I'm concerned that I don't have the management ability of this bill that I would need. Specifically, as defined in this bill, this benefit can be used for almost any reason. I mean, really the broad scope of why an employee could use it makes it a paid time off benefit. It's not just for safe and sick time. It's going to be used for any time an employee wants time off. And then even part-time and seasonal employees are eligible for this. And typically from an employer standpoint, we hire part-time employees. These are employees that are looking for flexibility in their workday and some extra spending money. They're not necessarily my employees that are looking to make a living off of this. And offering benefits to part-time employees gets expensive. I save all that mostly for my full-time employees, and now adding it in for part-time employees will add some expense and some tracking. What I would ask is that you reconsider the amendment that was brought up earlier, that you remove part-time and seasonal employees from the bill, because that's really not, I think, an appropriate benefit that would be going to that group of individuals. I don't believe that the state should be usurping the business owner's choice of what benefits to offer. I mean, we use benefits to reward and incent and thank our employees. It's a tool in our toolbox. Benefits are used to be competitive in the job market. As Representative Olson stated, you know, she's trying to level the playing field, but I feel like I can do that for my business. I don't need the state's help to do that. I can get very creative. I can find different ways to address what the employee needs are. I need tools that I can creatively package different to differentiate my business amongst my competitors, and a one-size-fits-all law like this isn't going to allow me to do that. Businesses, especially small businesses, we offer the benefits that we can afford, and we prioritize those benefits based on the employee feedback. So let the business owners work with their employees to decide what benefits will work best for them. In our case, just to be clear, we do offer paid time off, a very generous paid time off that in most cases exceeds what this bill is offering. We believe that paid time off does create a healthy and happy workforce, and that's what we want. We look at how we offer it based on being an incentive and a thank you to our employees. By first making sure that our employees are committed to our business and are going to be, you know, there to help us grow our business and our business thrive. And what I mean by that is we have a wait period before we allow our employees to start accessing that paid time off. Right now, they get a grant, and that grant comes after 6 months. But I would be amenable to even offering it sooner than that. But I'd like to have at least a three-month wait period for these benefits to be either accrued or used, because I need to know that that employee is making that commitment to me as much as I'm making a commitment to them. So I would ask that you have at least a 90-day wait period, similar to what ACA offers. I mean, I offer health care to all my employees, and there's a 90-day wait period before they become eligible for that. So another big concern is the staffing disruption. Right now, we don't encourage our employees to come to work when they're sick. I mean, in childcare, we want to make sure sick people are staying home. So we do provide ways for them to try to make up time if they're going to miss time, if they're not able to earn their PTO yet. But, you know, staffing in childcare is very challenging, as we've probably discussed in other areas. And right now, giving people paid time off is almost an incentive for them to take that day off because, you know what, they're just not up to a 40-hour work week this week. That does happen, I mean, quite a bit. And so I don't want to see a situation where they're going to say, hey, I don't feel good. And I can't question that because under this bill, I'm not allowed to ask what the employer or what the employee is using it for. I pretty much just have to take their word for it that they're using it correctly and legally. And then they're going to be missing work. And then in my situation, I got to find somebody to replace them because I can't run illegally. I have regulatory requirements that I have to adhere to. So it's going to cause a disruption in particularly childcare, but I can see other businesses as well. You know, the next concern is the administrative burden. We've talked a lot about small businesses, and small businesses, you know, I wear all the hats that I don't hire people for. I have a lot of different jobs that I've got to do every day to make this business work. I spend 60-plus hours a week just running my business or managing it, and a lot of it is due to employee mandates from the state, from the feds. And, you know, now we're adding another one, and this could be quite complex to try to administer. I mean, I'm trying to figure out how I'm going to track this against a more lucrative benefit that I already offer. And, you know, it's going to come down to a spreadsheet. And, you know, brought up earlier, if you make a mistake on that spreadsheet, it's going to be a painful one. So it really does add a lot of burden to business owners. And that's time that we can't get back for our families because, you know, I think, should be considered in this equation as well. So the rollover aspect especially could be very complicated to try to track. And I question how rollover is going to work with the inevitable paid family leave that's coming. And paid family leave seems to handle that long-term sick situation. That seems like what a rollover would be for. But how do we reconcile those two? Because it's going to be either a double up or it's going to be another tracking nightmare that we have to try to deal with. So, and finally, there is going to be a cost. I mean, we can argue whether it's negligible. But for a small business, any cost in the hundreds and getting up into the $1,000 is going to be a significant cost for us to have to deal with. And we're not going to be able to absorb that. We are going to pass that on to our customers. In my case, childcare is already very expensive, and now I'm going to possibly have to pass on more costs to my families just to account for more people that are going to get paid for their time off. So we're a small business. We're the ones that are going to get hardest hit by this bill. And I would ask that you would look at other channels to maybe incent small businesses or help them be able to offer this to the workers. If you really feel strongly that every worker should have it, maybe there's tax credits or other types of grants that small businesses can tap into that would help us get that off the ground. But try to absorb it all ourselves with all the administrative headaches and all the costs that are come to it. It's going to be a huge burden on small businesses here today. So, Mr. Chair, committee members, thank you for your time and allowing me to testify today.
Thank you, Mr. Paquette. Next person I have on my list is Lauren Schotthorst. And then after that, we got Nicole Blissenbach, commissioner, and then we'll take finish up with questions. We will be voting on this by 2:30, so members, welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Lauren Schotthorst, and I'm the Director of Workplace Management Policy for the Minnesota Chamber of Commerce. The Minnesota Chamber is a statewide organization representing more than 6,300 businesses and 500,000 employees throughout Minnesota. A majority of our members are small to mid-sized businesses. Thank you for the opportunity to share our opposition to this bill as amended, which is legislation seeking to impose a new unpaid pay leave mandate on Minnesota's employers. Minnesota's employers, employees, and communities are counting on lawmakers to work toward an agenda for economic growth, making Minnesota's economy stronger, more vibrant, and more competitive. We know from the Chamber's 2023 Business Benchmarks Report, and a copy has been distributed to all members prior to this meeting, that Minnesota lags other states in a number of key business metrics. Instead of accelerating economic growth in 2023, this bill takes the opposite approach. Minnesota's employers provide their employees with numerous benefits, promoting wellness and flexibility, building high morale, and attracting and retaining the best talent in a competitive marketplace while maintaining the ability to operate safely and manage a variety of workplaces across the state. In fact, over 80% of chamber members offer paid leave in some form to their employees, including in the jurisdictions discussed earlier. Employers in every industry in Minnesota are also experiencing supplier challenges, changes in workforce protocols, and the highest rate of inflation in over 40 years. Coinciding with these operational cost drivers, the state is experiencing a workforce shortage of crisis levels, largely due to structural demographic changes and declining labor force participation. Increasingly, companies and employees can choose to conduct business virtually or move to more rapidly to new jurisdictions, which may have real consequences for our state's economic growth and potential. Importantly to point out today, as we're considering this bill, among others, this session, Minnesota businesses don't have the luxury of considering tax and labor policies, state spending, and regulatory decisions separately in a vacuum. Employers, particularly our small and mid-sized businesses, are at a risk of a multitude of new mandates and workplace regulations. This is in a state that is already considered to be a high tax, high cost of doing state. So the paid leave and sick time mandates we've heard about do accumulate up to 80 hours annually, and it's a fully paid time off. It's a specific format as prescribed by the state for an expanded and overly broad set of familial persons for an increasing list of qualifying events. The bill also requires employers to maintain these specific records in a specific format or risk significant fines and liabilities. This is for a set of benefits that a majority of Minnesota Chamber members already are offering their employees in some form. This proposal is also different than the paid sick and safe time ordinances mentioned in Minneapolis, St. Paul, Duluth, and Bloomington, further increasing compliance and increasing costs for businesses who operate in these locations, as these local ordinances are not preempted, creating a scenario where employers would still be required to comply with a patchwork of sick and safe time mandates within Minnesota. This proposal is in addition to the proposal we'll discuss later this session that would mandate up to 24 weeks of paid family and medical leave on our business community. These leaves can be stacked on top of each other in addition to unpaid leave already required by FMLA in certain instances. So the cumulative cost, compliance, and operational impacts of mandates such as the ones being considered this session put pressure on employers and especially our small employers. These increased costs further limit resources available for employee compensation, job growth, and expansion in Minnesota. The Chamber supports an approach that limits these additional cost burdens and mandates so that employers who are doing their best to keep their doors open and Minnesotans employed can be successful. We know this is the first step, so we appreciate you taking these considerations into factor when you're debating this bill the rest of the session and others. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Schotthorst. And Commissioner Blissenbach. Welcome. Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record.
Thank you, Chair Nelson and members of the...
You can go quickly so we can get to questions.
Okay. Thank you, Chair Nelson, members of the committee. My name is Nicole Blissenbach, and I'm the Commissioner of the Department of Labor and Industry. Thank you for the opportunity to testify today in support of House File 19. Earned sick and safe time is critically important for workers, our communities, and the economic security of Minnesota families. Working Minnesotans need access to paid time off to care for themselves or a loved one when they get sick. Many workers can't afford to take time off and are presented with the difficult choice between their job and economic security or their health and the health of their family. Low-wage workers, workers of color, and workers in the service industry are especially likely to lack paid sick time. More than one in four private sector, in fact, more than one in four private sector workers and 7 in 10 of the lowest wage workers do not have paid sick days. Statewide earned sick and safe time improves access to what should be a basic workplace benefit, so that all Minnesotans can afford to take care of themselves and their family members when they are sick without risk of losing their jobs. Sick and safe time ordinances have passed in four Minnesota cities, and many employers choose to provide paid sick time to their employees. We have seen over and over again that this is the right thing to do, but still, not all Minnesotans have the right to this much-needed benefit. A statewide law would ensure all employees in Minnesota have the right to paid time off, regardless of where they live or work, supporting health and economic well-being. Businesses also benefit when their employees have access to paid sick time. When workers are able to stay home and recover from sickness, it lessens workplace exposure, making workplaces healthier and employees more productive. This bill will take away an obstacle to obtaining preventative care and medical care, which will promote health and faster recovery time from illness, enabling workers to return to work sooner and reducing health care costs. Employers in jurisdictions where employees have paid sick days, which is now 16 states and the District of Columbia, have seen increased growth and reported no negative impact on profitability. And then I also want to touch on a little bit, because I know I'll get questions about penalties. So the increased penalty authority in this bill, it really touches two areas. So the bill increases penalty authority in situations where an employer does not produce records after receiving a demand from the department. So there's a pretty easy way to avoid penalties in that situation, and that is to produce the records that the department needs to look at to ensure compliance with the law. And second, where an employer has repeatedly or willfully violated their obligations to their employees under the law. Those are the two different areas where increased penalty authority exists. I do want to point out that this authority is up to the increase to the designated penalty. And so this does give the department ability to adjust penalties to meet the situation, to meet the egregiousness of the situation. I can assure the committee, and to Representative McDonald's comment earlier, I consider myself and my colleagues at the Department of Labor and Industry to have pretty good common sense. Our goal is never to penalize over and over again. Our goal is to recover the benefits that are required to be provided to workers under the law. We take that approach with wage theft. We take that approach. We would take that same approach here. That's the priority. And in fact, I should mention, we issue penalties in less than 2% of investigations that we have at the department. But with that said, there are situations where it is necessary to ensure and promote compliance to issue penalties to deter the most egregious of behavior. And that is what we're hoping to do with that increased penalty. So earned sick and safe time promotes equity, family stability, and public health, and I'm pleased to offer my full support for this initiative. Thank you for the opportunity to testify and to voice the strong support from the administration for this important legislation.
Thank you. Representative Myers, you had a question.
Thank you, Chair Nelson. It's for Mr. Reynolds. I know he touched briefly on the effective date of 180 days. And I know we've seen some other kind of snafus a little bit when implementing other stuff. Do you believe that this 180 days is reasonable for small business owners?
Welcome back, Mr. Reynolds.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, Representative Myers. I think that the 180-day implementation date, depending on when the bill passes, is going to cause problems for employers who are in the middle of fiscal year or who haven't budgeted for this type of leave.
One more question, Mr. Representative Myers, and then I've got a couple more people on the list. Representative Myers.
Nope, that's fine. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Representative Kozlowski. For some reason, I'm in trouble saying the name.
Thank you, Chair Nelson. I think it's really compelling, and the work that was done here, working with businesses, workers, as well as communities, especially communities who have been at the forefront at advancing earned sick and safe time. I think it's also really compelling of what was just laid out by our commissioner about minimal violations and really working to make sure that there's no to low impact on businesses while working and providing that technical support and resourcing. I want to call attention that in the United States, 41 million folks do not have access to these benefits. In Minnesota, that translates to 36% of workers here in our home state who couldn't stay home today with a sick one, a loved one, or for themselves, especially without fear of being fired, as we heard, or losing a paycheck, where many folks are already one crisis away, and that creates a domino effect onto housing and so many other aspects. The other aspect of it is when we look at the workers of that 36%, as we could hear from Deed, in the numbers, it is black and brown women, especially single women. Just folks with disabilities are poor, are most already over in cost burden, folks with racial wealth gaps, with health care barrier access issues, and again, housing stability. And so I was very compelled by the testimony that we've heard and the work that's been done, that right now we have a responsibility and a huge opportunity to create the conditions where all workers and all people in Minnesota can thrive. And earn sick and safe time is an element and a very important tool in our toolbox to be able to lay down the tracks so that we have equity and an economy that lifts everybody across zip code, race, gender, ability. And so I ask for a roll call at this time.
Roll calls asked for, we'll have a roll call. The next person on my list is Representative Meckler.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This is for Mr. Pickett, if he could come back down. Or Rick, is it Pickett or Rickett? Pickett.
Pickett.
Sorry, I can't read my own writing.
Thank you.
Mr. Pickett, as you heard Mr. Reynolds testify earlier, the max, as Representative Wilson pointed out, would cost X number of dollars based on $4. I believe you said you had 65 employees between three locations. Can you establish like an average pay overall, what the general average would be per hour?
Mr. Pickett.
We have two locations, and my average pay right now for teachers is about $18.50.
Representative Macklin.
So when you have something like this bill come, and you know it's going to cost you more money, what are you going to assume that you're going to budget for the next 2 years to cover this additional cost? Are you going to go to the max or the least or somewhere in between?
I'm going to crunch the numbers based on my current attendance and absence and look at what it's costing me today, and then adding this cost in for those who aren't being paid for it, I will probably add that cost back into my next rate increase.
Okay, thank you.
Representative Greenman, quickly.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I think in the interest of time, I'm going to turn my question into an invitation. But we have heard statements like this is going to impact businesses, having them shut down and flee. We have heard statements about workers using earned safe and sick time, sort of abusing the system. We have not seen any evidence. I didn't see that in any of the letters. And so this is an invitation to Mr. Reynolds, to Ms. Schoharts. If you have that information and that evidence, please include that as this bill goes forward, because I think it's important when we make statements like that. We do know, and this is, I guess, my question to the author, is we do actually have evidence of how this works. And so I guess I'd ask very quickly, Representative Olson, how is this working in Duluth, in your city, when we hear all these speculation. I think it'd be helpful to hear how it's actually working in a city that's passed it.
Chair Olson.
Thank you, Representative Greenman, Chair Nelson. It's going well. The letters in the packet, and we're even a border city, just, you know, to be aware. It's not, we're have some of the challenges that I think you hear, the hyperbole about what is going to happen. That has not happened. The opposite has happened. The people that are talking about those businesses that are smallest and hardest hit in other parts of the state where Representative McDonald were talking about, they were some of the ones that weathered well in Duluth because they were able to, their employees showed up, they didn't turn over, they didn't have to try to recruit new employees. That they were able to maintain the ones that they had, and not only for their own health, but some of them talked about the mental health benefits of having this during especially a pandemic. So I know my city, and that's why we're really, it's not about my city, it's about our state, making sure everyone has this benefit.
Representative McDonald, I'll let you wrap up, and then we'll get to a vote.
Great, thank you, Mr. Chair. Governor Walz made a comment the other day, I printed it out here, regarding Minnesota and where he sees this going in the next 2 years in regard to the budget. And he said, he was asked the question about the $17.5 billion surplus and what to do with the tax cuts and et cetera. So he says, and I quote, "Whether it be through tax cuts or direct payments, we are committed to lowering cost for our working families, small businesses, and seniors while investing in the things that make life easier. We are working to provide direct relief as quickly as possible." Representative Olson, unfortunately, we share on this side that this bill, your bill, will not do that. It'll make it more expensive. You heard from Mr. Paquette, who said that we have to increase the cost for child care. And that, by the way, as you all know, we have a committee just in child care because it's very expensive. We heard from a leading member of that community that says he will have to increase the cost per to the parents. Certainly things are a little more expensive in the cities that are adopted this already. The cost of goods is very expensive. We don't think personally, fundamentally, I don't think, and I think my colleagues as well on this side, that government should be intervening and telling private employers what to do. That should be up to the free market. 80% of the chamber members already offer paid family sick leave. So does Minneapolis, St. Paul, and Duluth. Many, many businesses are offering this and taking care. We also have, by law, any member, any employee who is not feeling well or who is sick cannot be fired for not going to work. So any testifiers that you heard say that they were feared to go to work by not going to work, they would be fired. State law already dictates. They are allowed that time off. And if that's not, if they aren't, then someone's not doing the job in the state. This is will be very costly to the consumers and to the job creators, and for that, we don't support it. We're very concerned with the big government coming in, overtaking its step, and pushing this and mandating on businesses, because we know the cost of childcare will go up, the cost of our products will go up. They're not just going to consume this. So there, for those reasons, we are against it, and I ask for a roll call. I encourage you all to help our job creators and businesses by voting no on this bill.
A roll call's already been asked for. Representative Olson, if you want to quickly wrap up, and then we'll get to a vote.
Okay. Well, thank you, Mr. Chair and members, for a great committee hearing. And I think after carrying this bill for a few years now, I don't want to be shy about the fact our goal is to make sure every worker in the state has this benefit, full stop. Because the people who don't have it are the people that need it the most. And I'm not going to back down away from that or shy away from that. And that is the goal of this bill. And this is what Minnesotans are asking us for. And we know that the sky does not fall when this happens, because we are seeing other states and other cities that are doing well because they have this. So with that, I ask for your support, members.
And with that, I'll renew my motion that House File 19, as amended, be re-referred to the Judiciary, Finance, and Civil Law Committee. Roll call has been asked for. Please take the roll.
Chair Nelson.
Aye.
Nelson, aye. Vice Chair Berg.
Yes.
Berg, aye. Lead McDonald.
No.
McDonald, nay. Representative Daniels.
No.
Daniels, nay. Representative Greenman.
Aye.
Greenman, aye. Representative Hill.
Aye.
Hill, aye. Representative Hussein.
Aye.
Hussein, aye. Representative Jordan.
Jordan, aye.
Jordan, aye. Representative Koslowski.
Aye.
Koslowski, aye. Representative Meckland.
No.
Meckland, nay. Representative Myers.
Nay.
Myers, nay. Representative Schultz.
No.
Schultz, nay. Representative Wolgamott.
Aye.
Wolgamott, aye. Mr. Chair, With the conclusion of roll call, there are 8 ayes and 5 nays.
With 8 ayes and 5 nays, the bill is being referred. The motion prevails, and the bill is being referred to the Civil Law Committee. Thank you. And with that, members, we have a meet. Our next meeting is Thursday, and watch out for your thing and on your calendars. And with that, members, we are adjourned.